KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from the Upper Castro.
East Oakland.
Lake Mary, Oakland, what's poppin'?
Me and my husband are from Berkeley, California.
Dakota and Union City.
La Mission.
Coming up, a play about a man who spent more than half a century in prison.
They come up the ladder as become sergeants, lieutenants, and captains, and wardens, and what have you. Well, I come up the ladder with them.
Then dealing with depression and getting the wrong pills.
Man, that stuff had me. I didn't even know who I was.
And we'll get bite-sized answers to questions you asked, like the one about the oldest streetcar in San Francisco.
We call it the dinky because it's little, and when you ride it, it bounces a little.
Our ride is a little smoother. It's Cross Currents. Stick around. Oakland resident Glenn Bailey is 85 years old, and he spent 52 of those years in the penal system. Bailey was in and out of jail for most of his life, and he's never denied the crime that got him in the longest, a double homicide. Inside prison, Bailey formed friendships, allyships, and he never ran with any of the gangs. And when he was up for parole, he didn't lie. Not only did he believe he should be in prison, he wasn't angry at the system that put him there. And he says, owning up brought him peace and strength. Bailey grew to be a mentor and educator to younger prisoners, and now that he's out, his life story's been adapted to theater. The play Lifer by the Low Bottom Players is the story of Bailey from his youth in Oakland to his prison life and beyond. Playwright Dr. Ayodele Nzinga wrote the play. She joined me in studio along with Glenn Bailey to tell me more about Lifer. Let's start with you, Ayodele, with the idea, the initial idea of taking Glenn's story and putting it on stage. Where did that come from for you?
Well, I was already into exploring the carceral system in the United States, and I had done several pieces of work and a great deal of research on the carceral system as it intersects with Black communities, and in particular, families. And I found out that almost every single entity within community has a deep familiarity with the carceral system, either because they have experienced it themselves or had a family member or someone close in their circle of associates who have been arrested or actually has done time. So it was at the presentation of Beyond Bars, Growing Home, that an associate of Mr. Bailey's approached me and asked me if I was interested in an assignment that wasn't prose or theater. Actually, this started out with a book project. Because I don't do transactional art, it was necessary that I spend some time with Glenn and get to know him. My question, before I had other questions, was, why is he worthy of writing a book? And so we met in 2014?
I think so, 2014.
Yeah. And so I felt like a year was just an adequate time to get to know him, you know? And in that period of time, I discovered that there was a really remarkable human being behind the story of spending 52 years in the carceral system.
Glenn, what did you initially think when you heard your story is going to turn into a book and a play?
When I got to San Quentin in 1972, on my last joke, because I did 42 years the last time, I did 10 years prior, you know, off and on, in three jokes. And I knew a lot of guys that got out of prison. A lot of guys that she alluded to that were well known. But they didn't, I don't feel as though they did us justice, the one that they left behind. And so when I came home, I was determined not to write a book or whatever. I got to thinking that I'm still here. There must be a reason why I'm still here. Now, what makes my story unique, I believe, is that over 60 years I've been in and out of the prison system. But when I went the first time, I recognize the fact that you have to treat people like you want to be treated. And the people that I, the prison officials I worked for then, as they come up the ladder, as become sergeants, lieutenants, and captains, and wardens, and what have you, well, I come up the ladder with them.
Everybody has a story.
Mm-hmm.
Like how, that's why my question to you, Ayodele, is the question you asked yourself, why him? What was the answer?
He has a tremendous amount of grace. And it has cost him. And it has, I think, transformed him. And it's the light that is burning so bright, it's saved a lot of people. Glenn is a person that in hood vernacular we would say kept it 100. He always told the truth about what he did. He would never implicate anyone else. He didn't go and join something inside a prison to keep him safe. He didn't kowtow to administration to keep him safe. He didn't pile up a bunch of bodies to keep him safe. He used his own story, where it went wrong and what he learned. And he's a voracious reader. And he was open to being transformed. And in being transformed, I can't tell you the number of people that come and testify to how he saved their lives for not entertaining BS, for a polite term, and for being that unerring voice of truth, whether you wanted to hear it or not. And his example of speaking never for itself, but always for groups of people.
We started in an interesting way, kind of going deeper, but I just want to get the basic, tell me about the play. What's the story of the play? How did you take his story and turn it into a play?
It's mostly all firsthand accounts directly from transcripts that I've developed for the book. And what you get is a man who committed a double homicide and freely admitted it, and will tell you the circumstances under which that happened. You see him going back and forth to parole board and then finding him unsuitable, while inside the system itself, he saved countless lives. One of the things I'm really proud about this piece of work is that when we presented it, the Alameda County District Attorney, Nancy O'Malley, came to see the show. The young DA who prosecuted him didn't end up at the play, but she's in the play. And what O'Malley took from it is that their interaction could have gone a different way, and that possibly the standard for release should be reviewed. And that's substantial movement because of a piece of art. There's an interesting thing that happens, too, when men are set down for long periods of time. You have this choice. There's a sort of stillness that comes over them that's not accorded to you in everyday life. We live in an attention deficit society where we're all trying to get our next meal, keep the lights on, and take care of loved ones. When you remove all of that responsibility, a person can sink down to the depths of despair and be open for a lot of things that probably aren't very positive. The security of being in a gang or learning how to be a better criminal this time from people who got caught and are inside there with you. Okay? Or in that stillness, one can find enlightenment. Mr. Bailey is an excellent teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so knowledge is all out there if we're willing to get it. And then the universe is an interesting place. If you are on a path and you're looking for something, it's always there to be found if you look in the right places.
Mm.
So I like to think that the universe aligned me and Bailey because I was doing a type of work that would allow me to see what an extraordinary opportunity he was. And because I had invested enough earnestness for the universe to reward me with such a magnificent subject.
Mr. Bailey, what do you want people to take from this production?
Well, I'm hoping that they would take from the play that they are not in this world by themselves. We are here together.
That's Glenn Bailey and playwright Ayodele Nzinga. You can catch the play Lifer this Saturday at Eastside Arts Alliance in Oakland. Find more details at klw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Now for a different take on prison life.
This is Uncuffed.
Stories from Solano State Prison.
Uncuffed reporter Brian Thames talked with another prisoner about a challenge that a lot of us face, whether or not we're locked up.
Raymond Jones suffers from major depression, which can be quite debilitating for him. Sometimes, he doesn't want to shower, eat, or even think. He also doesn't like to take the drugs prescribed to him by the medical department because of the way they make him feel. Raymond probably doesn't realize it, but in my opinion, his triumphs over his illness make him a real Superman.
Why do you think you suffer from depression?
I suffer from it because for a while, I never knew what it was. I never knew I was going through that. Kind of make you feel like you're going crazy.
Have you sought professional help for your depression? Tell me about that.
From the time I realized that I had this, it was try one medication after another. That's basically what this paper is right here stating. On here is that that the inmate patient reports new medication doesn't help him because you're trying things. Here, let me give you this, and you'll take it for 10 days, and then you come back and tell me how it makes you feel.
Well, in fairness to them, don't they have to do that to find out what works for you?
Sometimes medication ain't always the answer. Man, I found other ways that's working way better. It's my own little system that I've developed for myself, but I just don't believe in taking medication. I recall taking a pill one time. It was the size of a sunflower seed. But that pill was so powerful, man. Taking that whole pill, that pill had me gone for 3 days.
What do you mean gone?
I couldn't function. I mean, I can get up and use the bathroom. I can get up and go to chow. But I would get up, go to breakfast, come back, lay down, sleep all day. Get up for count, get up, go to chow, come back, sleep all night. For 3 days.
Yeah, but during those 3 days, you weren't depressed, were you?
Man, I don't know what I was. Man, that stuff had me. I didn't even know who I was.
As recent as 2015, I had been depressed, right? A depression that I had never experienced before or since. That was the first time. I was depressed for 4 days. It was black. It was black like these microphones. It just was black. It felt tangible. And I kept hearing that I should kill myself, that I should kill myself, that I should kill myself. I don't know how close I was to giving in to that. I have no idea. But I know I'll never forget that. What's the longest unbroken period that you've been depressed?
I don't know.
Guess for me.
It's hard to say. When I even feel like a depressive state coming on, sometimes I pray. Sometimes I'll just go take a shower. You know what I mean? Something as either a nice hot shower or a cold shower would change my mood. Anything to change my mood. Because if I stay in the mood that I'm in, it may wind up bad. It's kind of hard, you know what I mean? Dealing with it. We not Superman, we don't have superpowers. So anybody say that they can defeat being overwhelmed by anything, you're lying.
That was Raymond Jones speaking with Brian Thames. Brian is a student in KALW's radio program at Solano State Prison. He says Raymond keeps himself busy with a job as a porter or janitor and plays a lot of dominoes with the other guys. Our class at Solano is supported by the California Arts Council and the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. All content is approved by an information officer. Arts Council is now looking for groups to offer new arts programs in state prisons. You can apply by April 8th at artsincorrections.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. If you tune in to KALW regularly, you've probably heard stories from our project, Hey Area, where you, the listener, ask the questions and we go out and try to find the answers. Well, today we're showing ones that were created by our Audio Academy fellows, students who are currently training in our newsroom. Let's start with this question. What is San Francisco's oldest running streetcar? Magnolia McKay went to find out.
San Francisco is home to a fleet of colorful historic streetcars. They run on Market Street and the Embarcadero as the F and E lines. But the oldest streetcar? Well, born in 1896 is car 578, a streetcar named Dinky?
We call it the Dinky because it's little, and when you ride it, it bounces a little bit.
This is Allison Kant from Market Street Railway. They're a nonprofit that preserves historic transit in San Francisco. While most of the vintage streetcars can seat 60, Dinky has half that capacity. It's made of wood and painted mustard yellow.
It was built here in San Francisco by Hammond Builders, and up until 1906, it was in passenger service.
After the big earthquake, Dinky was put to work. For decades, it went out in the early morning to release sand on the rails so passenger streetcars would have better traction. Then, in 1956, it was restored by Muni Shopman, and it's been a show car ever since. Because of its age, Dinky's not in regular service, but I got to take a fun-sized trip out of the yard where it lives, surrounded by doting Muni drivers like Robert Parks.
It's a beautiful car. It's a lot of fun to drive. It's a thrill to drive. And I love to have it out.
You can see Dinky once a year when it comes out for Muni Heritage Day each September. In San Francisco, I'm Magnolia McKay.
Thanks, Maggie. All right, let's hear another Hey Area question. Listener Katie Taylor asked a fun one. She said, why did Folsom Street become the center of sexy times? Audio Academy fellow Lance Gardner got his groove on to find out that answer.
I'm here in Ringgold Alley with community historian Paul Gabriel. This little strip between 8th and 9th Streets is part of San Francisco's newly designated Gay and Leather Cultural District.
This is a famous place for people to come after hours and have sex outdoors.
That history is one of the reasons why every year there's a street fair around the corner on Folsom. It draws as many as 250,000 consenting adults.
And there's this leather daddy, you know, and he's got the glasses and the leather cap, and he's got his boy, and his boy is in a full plastic bodysuit that he can barely walk, held by a chain leash at the neck.
As it turns out, the origin story of the Folsom Street Fair has as much to do with affordable housing as it does with sex. Back in the 60s, people facing housing discrimination started coming to this area. Gay men, racial minorities, elderly people. During the day, it was a blue-collar industrial neighborhood. But at night,
and it had this just mass of bars and sex clubs and dance clubs. And you could just sort of stumble through this whole thing for a whole weekend if you wanted and never get disgorged until Monday morning.
By the 80s, plans for redevelopment threatened to displace the boots and roots of Soma residents. So in 1984, activists organized an event to raise money and keep the city from building a freeway through their community.
They had like kids doing art. They had the whole community there at the fair, including the leather community.
And by the early 90s, there were fewer watercolors and more assless chaps. The leather community took the opportunity to draw people from around the country by adopting the fair as their own. Today in Ringgold Alley, you won't find the kind of late-night cruising that put it on the map. Plaques and monuments commemorating the leather community share the alley with a tech startup in a gated apartment complex. But up on Folsom every year, there's a fair that continues to raise funds and eyebrows. And that is what put Folsom Street at the center of sexy times. In Ringgold Alley, I'm Lance Gardner for Hey Area.
Thanks, Lance. Okay, we're going to hear one more from listener Stephanie Stefanos. She wanted to know, what is the steepest street in San Francisco? Audio Academy fellow Aaliyah Yates did the math.
Bruce Storrs has a nice view. This makes sense because he's a surveyor for the city and county of San Francisco. His job is to make sure the streets are maintained. And he says this can be tough because the people who designed them back in the 1800s didn't plan for the hills.
On paper, they would be designed long before the street was laid out.
Past surveyors used those plans and then had to inspect the hills and sand dunes. In order to make a street, what was there had to be moved.
The super steep ones are on rock, not on sand. It was much more difficult to move a bunch of rock, hard rock, than it was to move sand around.
All righty. So which street is the steepest?
Filbert, between Hyde and Leavenworth, is 31.52%.
Now mind you, this is a busy street, cars zoom down. So my next question, of course, is how do you measure that number? The answer is easier than you think.
It's called rise over run.
You remember high school, don't you?
You take the elevation difference and you divide it by the length of the piece of the street or anything.
But numbers didn't give me the extent of how steep it was. So I went to check it out for myself.
All right, let's start our ascension. All right, let's do it.
Right off the bat, there is no sidewalk. That's replaced with steps. You know, so people can actually walk up the street.
Wait. Give me a minute. I'm not even playing. I'm like actually tired.
But if you can get to the top, the view is amazing.
That's an Instagrammable picture right there.
At Filbert and Leavenworth, I'm Aaliyah Yates for Hey Area.
All right, Aaliyah. We'll have more Hey Area shorts from our Audio Academy fellows tomorrow on Cross Currents. And you can hear more from the Hey Area Project at KALW.org and click Cross Currents. That's also where you can subscribe to our weekly newsletter. This music is by Mr. Hungry and the Gnawing Sensations from San Francisco. They're performing at the Peacock Lounge in the Lower Haight tomorrow night. Today's team includes Janae Darden, Joanne DeLuna, Sarah Nora Coast, Lisa Morehouse, True Quinn, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Jessica Plachik, Andrew Stelzer, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. Thank you.